Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. The United States is making steady progress distributing vaccines with more than 13% of the population vaccinated. Among some tribes, vaccinations exceed that rate to the extent that some tribal health systems are offering vaccinations to non-tribal citizens. But many Native people in urban areas have to rely on their state health systems for vaccinations or face a trip back to their tribal nation. We'll learn more about the varied distribution of vaccines after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Three tribes in Alaska are participating in a pilot program to collect data and provide solutions on a community level to address missing and murdered Indigenous people. KDLG's Brian Venwa spoke with officials about how the new project will change their approach on active and cold cases.
At the beginning of the year, the U.S. Attorney's Office for Alaska announced that the Department of Justice would embark on a pilot project to address the missing and murdered Indigenous persons epidemic in the state. The Chugiang Tribal Council in Dillingham is one of three Alaska tribes that volunteered to be part of the project. Each tribe will develop a tribal community response plan tailored to its needs, resources, and culture. According to a study by the Urban Indian Health Institute, out of 29 states, Alaska ranks fourth in the number of missing and murdered Indigenous women. Tribal Administrator Courtney Carty says the importance of gathering statistics on a local level.
All too often, Native communities are researched by outsiders. In this situation, it's very important that, especially with such a sensitive topic, that our council is able to work with families directly to quantify the issue and demonstrate that ourselves versus having an outside organization do that for us.
The tribe meets with the U.S. Attorney's Office as part of a forum to increase communication between communities and public officials. Ingrid Cumberledge is the MMIP coordinator for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Alaska. She says that a key to reduce MMIP cases is to establish connections between tribes and agencies and to implement solid tribal community response plans.
We really just need to build those relationships and make sure that everybody is reporting as soon as possible so that we can get working on any incident at the quickest possible moment.
Brian Schroeder, the U.S. Attorney for Alaska, stressed that it is important to establish communication and transparency before crises occur.
A large part of what this is getting all the parties involved, all the stakeholders involved, to start talking to each other now. You want to be able to talk ahead of time and know each other and open those lines of communication.
Chugiang's plan will serve as a model for hub communities like Bethel and Nome. More information about the pilot project can be found by contacting the U.S. Attorney's Office in Alaska. In Dillingham, I'm Brian Venwa.
In Montana, after launching a fund to assist families of missing persons in gathering evidence, Snowbird Fund committee members say public interest in the project has allowed them to increase the fund. Yellowstone Public Radio's Caitlin Nicholas reports.
Ivan McDonald is a filmmaker who's been documenting the missing and murdered Indigenous women's crisis for years and serves on the Snowbird Fund committee. At Montana's Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Task Force meeting, he said the fund acts as a bridge, connecting families to money they need to respond quickly.
We know that so often in those missing persons cases or when someone turns up missing, those first few hours are so incredibly important, and research shows that the number one reason that the Department of Justice declines these cases in Indian country is due to lack of evidence and sort of all of those things, forensic evidence.
With grants starting at $500, the Snowbird Fund helps families cover search costs, such as gas for vehicles, drones to survey an area, or food to feed search parties. Grant applicants must be affiliated with an active missing persons case. I'm Caitlin Nicholas.
The Assembly Judiciary Committee in the California Legislature approved a measure Tuesday to allow state and local court employees to receive paid holiday on California Native American Day. The bill by Assemblymember James Ramos would amend a code to recognize Native American Day as a judicial holiday. Paid judicial holidays are designated in a different code from holidays recognized by other state agencies. The bill would not create an additional paid holiday, but would exchange Columbus Day for California Native American Day. It advanced by a 10-0 vote. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Support by AARP, accepting community challenge grant applications from eligible nonprofits and governments to fund quick action innovative projects emphasizing diversity and inclusion at aarp.org/community challenge through April 14th.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands, the Sherwood Dui. Many Americans continue to wait on word that a COVID-19 vaccine is available to them. There remain some bottlenecks in vaccine distribution, including the time it takes to produce them and getting enough qualified people to administer them. So far, less than 14% of the population is vaccinated. Meanwhile, some tribes are having more success. In Oklahoma, the Chickasaw Nation and a handful of other tribes are now offering vaccines to anyone, regardless of tribal citizenship or tribal residency. We'll hear more about that this hour. We'll also hear about why one Native health organization is calling for better vaccine distribution for Native people in Washington, D.C. But first, we'll hear from the Navajo Nation, where at least one in five citizens is fully vaccinated. Joining us now from the Navajo Nation is Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez. President Nez, thank you for being with us today. Welcome.
Hi there, Tara, and greetings, Doyate, to all your listeners throughout the country, well, throughout the world, really, right?
Yeah, and you know what? Even beyond that, those airwaves, they keep going and going. So, President Nez, thank you for being here. And yesterday, we can kind of call it historic in terms of where things currently stand with the Navajo Nation. Go ahead and share some of that good news.
Well, Tara, here on the Navajo Nation, we've been working very well with the local healthcare facilities under the Navajo Area IHS and the 638 self-governance healthcare facilities. 238,085 doses have come to the Navajo Nation. Of that, 196,902 have gone into the arms of our Navajo people, and that's 82.7% we've used and we've given to our citizens. And those that are, I'm using this term loosely, is fully vaccinated is 80,755. The reason why is, as you know, Pfizer, Moderna has two shots and Johnson & Johnson has one shot. But the efficacy percentage is a lot higher for the two doses. So that's something that we're going to have to discuss within, I guess, all of this country, including Native American communities. And yes, Let me talk about last week, Tara. Last week, we recognized the 1 year that this virus came in to the Navajo Nation with its first positive case and its first death. So last week, we had an event on Monday to talk about healing for those that are in need of support. I know that many of us throughout the country didn't grieve from our loss like we used to. You know, we tribal communities more so, I think, maybe we bring all our clan members together and we come together and help each other heal through our loss of our family members. And that didn't happen because of COVID-19 with all these protocols that are in place. And then also to see our loved ones be placed in their final resting spot. So there's still, you know, some sense of sadness and also the grieving process has been interrupted because of this pandemic. But so we wanted to give resources to people, people to talk to, counselors, traditional practitioners, medicine men, pastors. And so Monday we discussed that, and we wanted to move towards healing. And on Wednesday, we did a candlelight vigil at our nation's capital at the Veterans Memorial Park here in Window Rock. And we put up some luminaries throughout the park. And at that time, it was 1,222 people we've lost, and there was 1,222 luminaries placed in the park. And that was just to remember those that we've lost, and also remember that we are hit hard, but we are working together to overcome these sure. difficult times. And then Friday, we had a day of prayer, a day of unity, a day of focusing on the future. And we had Secretary Deb Haaland join us live, one of her first speeches as the Interior Secretary. We also had a letter sent to us, and I read from the President of the United States and the First Lady of the United States. And that day was about coming together and also in unity and to reflect on 1 year of strength and resilience. And as we move forward into another year, I guess because this pandemic is not moving, you know, going away anytime soon, we wanted to make sure that people recognize that, you know, we helped each other out and get through these tough times. And then, lo and behold, our prayers were answered, right? Monday, no cases, no deaths. We haven't had that in over half a year. And yesterday, three cases and zero deaths. So we're on all-time low, but our thoughts and prayers go out to everyone who lost loved ones. Here on Navajo, yes. 30,010 have caught the virus, and 1,233 have lost their lives to COVID-19.
And President Nez, this, you know, takes us right to where we are right now. And, you know, I hear a lot of these discussions, too, of people thinking we've been in this a year and thinking about what is next, what's in front of us. And President Nez, earlier you mentioned of people who are receiving the vaccine. And I'm wondering, when you say the percentile of how many have received the vaccine, fully received it, are you aiming to have 100% of the nation vaccinated?
You know, that's our hope. Of course, we're not going to force everybody to get the vaccine. It's their choice. All we have done thus far is to get the information out to the citizens. And I think because of that, Tara, we've seen a big interest in taking the vaccine. You know, transparency is key. You know, as you know, we have town hall meetings Tuesdays and Thursdays every week giving our Navajo citizens an update. We also had Dr. Fauci on our town halls. We also had Dr. Burla. You know, we had 200 of our citizens be a part of that those clinical trials for Pfizer. So just giving information to our citizens, let them get their questions answered, and also leadership rolling up their sleeves and taking the vaccine, I think has been key to bringing confidence to the vaccine. And so I'm hoping and we're praying, you know, that people get their vaccination. But I hear reports that some individuals are not wanting it. But at least we get to 80%, maybe 75-80% of our people vaccinated, and will get us to the goal of, you know, being what's the term they use? I forget. I lost that term. But anyway, so we're, you know, herd immunity, that's the term I was trying to remember. And that way, you know, and I think that's the reason why we have some very low numbers here on Navajo, too, is that the vaccination, the big turnout in vaccination. And scientists have been saying that these vaccines can push off these new variants out there. And so that's the next message we're going. We're also here on Navajo are not following through on some of these new CDC updated protocols. And what I mean by that is we're using the CDC protocols that were put in place last year in 2020. As we come closer and closer to where we are today, you see CDC lessening those restrictions. Now, you know, before it was 6 feet. Now they're saying 3 feet social distancing. And we're like, no way. We're going with the 6 feet. We're going to be wearing masks. I know CDC is saying if two people are vaccinated, you don't have to wear masks. Here on Navajo, everybody's still going to wear masks. And so we're not even going to update those protocols because, you know, we're able to put our own restrictions in. And that's going to keep those numbers down, we believe.
Sovereignty straight up in play. President Nez, I know you got to get going here less than a minute before we have to go to break. Anything you want to leave us with?
Well, I'll be testifying shortly to the House Committee on the Judiciary, the Subcommittee on the Constitutional Civil Rights and Civil Liberties. And there they're going to be examining the need to expand eligibility under the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. And just imagine some of our tribal folks that have been exposed to radiation, we have lost during this pandemic, and they will never see the just compensation that they should be getting. And a lot of our people have lost their lives, and they're in that most vulnerable population category. So the fight continues, Tara, but we continue to advocate on behalf of Navajo Nation and rest of Indian country. So thank you for having us on the show.
All right. Well, thank you for that update. And President Nez, wish you the best with your testimony. And folks, we are turning to our Native Nations to hear about vaccine access. What about folks who are in urban areas? Coming up after the break, we're going to hear from one individual who had to fly home. We'll hear her story. We hope to hear yours, too. If you want to give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848 is the number to join us. And just thinking about what is going on in your community, do you feel your tribe is a leader, maybe even in your own state, on some of the vaccine rollout? We hope you'll call in. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And you can even tweet your thoughts to us at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Thanks again. And go ahead. Dial in now. If you're one of the nearly 160 million Americans getting a $1,400 stimulus payment from the federal government, you may be wondering how to best use the funds. Should it go to meeting your immediate needs? We'll talk about managing your money during the pandemic on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we're talking about access to the COVID-19 vaccine today. And were you able to get one? Are you still on a waiting list? The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. And right now we're going to travel over to Fruitland, New Mexico. With us on the line today is Jordan Bennett Begay, and she is the managing editor for Indian Country Today. And she is Danae. Our pleasure to have her here. Jordan, welcome to Native America Calling.
Hi, Yata. Thanks for having me.
And Jordan, I just want to go ahead, give it to you, you know, sharing your story of having to come home to do that. Tell us a little bit about how you got to that point and some of your experience.
Yeah, sure. I think since I live in Arlington, Virginia, I pre-registered for the vaccine, I think probably beginning of February, maybe mid-February. And I got an email or text back saying, great, your request, you know, you might get vaccinated several months later. And I thought, that's a little bit too long. And by that time, I think maybe a week later, my entire immediate family and I guess the extended family also have been vaccinated. All the adults, you know, except the kids. And I thought at that point, this is ridiculous. And, you know, my entire community is getting vaccinated. And here, you know, I'm in an urban area. I have no way to get vaccines. And I also checked in with Native American Lifelines, who has two locations in on the East Coast in Baltimore and Boston. And I checked in with them, and they've been very diligent in communicating with the community out in the D.C. area. And they're trying to, you know, work with CVS, from what I last heard, to distribute vaccines. But because they don't have a physician on staff to administer vaccines, there wasn't a way for them, you know, natives out east to get any. But they were helpful in trying to, you know, get the current COVID vaccine plan in our state to us if we reached out to them, and they're very helpful in that. And finally, at that point, I think probably the end of February, I realized, oh, I have to go home. I'm not waiting. You know, if my entire community back at home can get vaccinated, I can go home and get it. So I booked a flight, and I now have my first vaccine dose. I went out to Shiprock and got my vaccine at a community event pretty much. And that was pretty neat to just even be part of and witness. Because they're very efficient, it was very quick, and, you know, it was just kind of like a celebration when I drove up to get my dose. So it was kind of amazing to be come back home for it.
And Jordan, what kind of planning did you have to do that? You know, did you come in quarantine, and how long are you staying? If you care to share any of that, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I did. And I think I'm one of I'm very fortunate and privileged to have a place to quarantine. So I did have to do that for some time. And then, of course, like constantly wearing a mask and keeping my distance. And at least for planning for the money wise, you know, the pandemic has a lot of us just staying at home and not spending money. And I've been trying not hard to spend the money, you know, online. So I saved up enough where I could buy the flight on a whim, and flew in an airline where, you know, the middle seat was blocked, and did what I could in flying to make sure I was safe, so I could protect my family, even though they're all vaccinated. I think that's pretty much the plan it went out. I did get Pfizer out of the three that were offered. The community offered Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J, but because, you know, I had my pick of the litter, I did think of getting J&J, but I think the efficacy on the Pfizer kind of convinced me, and also it was 21 days. So by the time I wanted to go back to D.C., I don't want to be feeling terrible on the plane. Moderna, you know, 28 days between doses. So that was kind of my logic behind choosing a vaccine and when to fly home.
And Jordan, what are your thoughts that this is kind of a plan for people who, especially our urban native populations, and just hearing that, you know, they're having long wait times. What are your thoughts that, you know, going back home is one way to do this, and just thinking about, you know, what the possibilities are, especially when you are living in an urban setting and this is the result. What are your thoughts? I'm curious.
You know, I think I knew this was a big risk for me in taking, but for me, at least, I knew that my family would be was safe already, because I do know a lot of people back in the D.C. area who want to go back to the homelands, not just to Navajo, but to other tribal lands. And, you know, they're concerned too about their, you know, parents or family who are not vaccinated or who are vaccinated. And I just did the best I could in my situation to protect myself and my family. I know a lot of people probably think I shouldn't have done it, but I wasn't about to wait several months. Who knew what that meant, right? To get my vaccine, if that meant I could come home and get it done in a month and be okay. You know, I went above and beyond in like personal hygiene, just washing my hands and, you know, sanitizing, Lysoling my bags when I got back from those airport, changing my clothes, wearing a face shield on the plane. So I think, you know, if people are in a situation to do it and they feel comfortable, but I wouldn't want to force anybody to, you know, go outside of their comfort zones to do it. So it was like, you know, a risk on my part, but at least for me personally, I thought it was definitely worth it because I feel much better in knowing that I have one dose down, I have one more to go.
Well, Jordan, I appreciate you being here. And if you want to connect with her, you can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Let's take a call. We have Zach, who's in Los Angeles, California, listening in online. Zach, thanks for reaching out. You're on air.
Good. How are you?
We're doing okay.
I received my vaccination, my second vaccination. The first one was a few days before the 12th of February. They called me, actually, the health center at the Rincon Reservation, which is in the San Diego Mountains. They called me, and I said, I can come right away. And they told me to come. I went there on the 12th, and it was really wonderful. It was great. You know, you have to drive about 120 miles from Los Angeles to get to that little rancheria in the San Diego Mountains. It's a pretty nice little rancheria. They've got a Harrah's Casino there, and it's pretty humble little rancheria, actually, though. But I returned on March 12th. They gave me my second vaccination. It was a Moderna. And my impression was that they were offering it to people who were a little bit older, Native Americans. You can go there and get it. You can call them and get it, call them and sign up. But you have to have a BIA identification number and enrollment number, which I am. I'm a member of the Rocky Boy Reservation in Montana. And anyway, they were really beautiful. I go there for my dental anyway. And so so that was really wonderful. I really enjoyed going down there with those times. Although in my old beat-up little Prius, it's kind of risky to take it anywhere over 100 miles away because it might break down. But it was good. It was good. And then about a week ago, I noticed on Facebook that the Indian Health Center here in Los Angeles, in downtown Los Angeles, on 6th West 6th Street, they're starting to offer vaccinations now too, and to members of the Native American community. I guess you probably have to be same thing. You have to have a BIA enrollment number or BIA identification, or a member.
Well, Zach, just knowing that, you know, what people who are in urban settings and you know, what you're sharing as well as what we just heard from Jordan. You know, a lot of times we've had the conversation about how all of the healthcare for urban natives and the things you have to go through in order to receive healthcare that you need. Maybe even that means, you know, going all the way back home for some of this and in your journey, having to go to another place. And I'm glad you had a positive experience with that too. And with that, I want to bring in another voice. We have Stacey Bolin on the line. She's a CEO of the National Indian Health Board, and she is Sault Ste. Marie Chippewa. She joins us today out of Washington, D.C. Stacey, thank you for joining us for another Native America Calling.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you very much.
Thanks. And also, thank you to Zach, who gave us a ring out of Los Angeles, California. But Stacey, I did want to go to you, you know, right now, just hearing from Zach, hearing from Jordan, and all of the conversations, even the ones we've had on this program about more adequate needs for healthcare for our urban Native populations. And here we are, case in point. I want to hear your comments. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, I'd like to comment personally and organizationally, if I may. I also went back to my tribe to be vaccinated. I had the Johnson & Johnson vaccine on March 13th. And it was a really difficult decision to make. I live in Alexandria, Virginia. So, you know, Jordan and I don't have too disparate of experiences with the frustration of trying to get the vaccine here. And, you know, it's quite a trip. But we made the trip, and I was able to go with my mom, both my sisters, and all the adults in my family together. They all got their second shots that day, and I had my one-and-done Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and I am incredibly grateful to the Sault Ste. Marie tribe for making that available to me. We brought with us our communications department, and we did an event at my tribe at that vaccination event called the NIHB Acts of Love campaign. And it's a campaign that we launched to originally depoliticize the wearing of a mask as a public health really necessity in this very, very serious and challenging time. But it evolved to be, you know, we identified five acts of love around how we can help prevent and fight COVID-19 on a personal level. One is to wear a mask. So we have these really cool masks that have a heart and a wordle inside all about tribes and what we're experiencing with COVID. And it says act of love. And then we have hand sanitizer and different stickers and fun things about, you know, I love you, but keep your distance kind of thing. So you, once you're vaccinated, you still have to wear the mask. Just like President Ness said, you still have to be very cognizant of hygiene and washing your hands, using hand sanitizer. You still have to keep your distance. Those are three acts of love, but we would also say that getting vaccinated itself is an act of love. And after you've been vaccinated, bring someone else along from community or family and get them vaccinated too. So that's my personal story. And that was, you know, we gave out some little toolkits with the mask and the hand sanitizer and so forth. And we'll be duplicating that for tribes across the country to help with their encouraging increases in their vaccination numbers. But for the urban issue that we're talking about, earlier this year, the National Indian Health Board had been receiving just an incredible number of calls from American Indian Alaska Native people in this region who were really afraid of the COVID threats, obviously, and very, very distressed that they could not get the vaccine, that they didn't have access to the vaccine, that as has been described, the mainstream community governments around here have been really not very effective, in my opinion, in my experience, at getting the vaccine to folks. I mean, I have asthma, type 2 diabetes. I'm a cancer survivor. I'm somebody who really, really, really wanted that vaccine. And I signed up very, very early, and zero progress has still been made to this day. So we reached out to the National Council of Urban Indian Health and talked to them about what they've been doing, what they've been working on to try to bring the vaccine to Native peoples in the D.C. area. And they've been working at it really hard and not making the kind of progress that one would expect. I mean, it shouldn't be such a heavy lift, but it is. And then, of course, there's the idea that folks in Virginia and D.C. don't necessarily identify Baltimore as, you know, the place where they live or would get care. So our organization, along with nine other Native organizations, got together, and we wrote a letter to the president and the Indian Health Service asking for consideration for prioritizing the vaccine for all Native people, for those living in the Washington, D.C. area, as well as those living around the country where there aren't necessarily urban centers that tribes could even go to. In fact, there are 41 urban Indian centers, Indian health centers in this country, serving, according to the Indian Health Service, they serve about 100,000 people. That leaves thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of American Indians and Alaska Natives without any kind of facility near them in their the places where they live and work that are not inside the boundaries of Native lands. So there is a tremendous need, and we recognize that. So we got together, our organization, our board passed a resolution offering support to this effort, and National Congress of American Indians, National Indian Gaming Association, Native Contractors Association, National Indian Health Board, and others all signed on together to support this initiative.
And this is pretty, you know, this issue of healthcare for folks who are in urban nations or urban areas is one that we've touched on a lot. And I'm wondering, too, if you know this story firsthand because you are one of those people. What do you think about, you know, the fastest way to get healthcare is to go home? What do you think about that, especially getting the vaccine? Really want to hear those vaccine stories today. If you want to give us a ring, our phone lines are open. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And, you know, what are other things that you think we can learn from all of this? And just hearing what NIHB's efforts are to bring more awareness to this, to gain support so that things can change. You know, what other serious conversations do need to happen in terms of, you know, urban healthcare, and especially when it comes to vaccine access? What has been your own story? Maybe you are living in one of our major cities. Maybe there's some really important work that calls you to work in the city. We know a lot of our communities have tribal members who are living and working right now in the D.C. area, and the things that they have to go through in order to get the vaccine. If you have a story to share, go ahead and call in. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And if it feels more comfortable to call in anonymously, that option is there for you too. Go ahead, give us a ring. These phone lines will stay open through the break. And we hope that you'll call in and share your own story. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Go ahead, make the phone lines ring. We are ready for you. You're welcome in this space.
Did you know COVID financial relief in the form of forgivable PPP loans is available to small business owners and independent contractors, including artists? DreamSpring has worked with New Mexicans looking to open or expand their business for over 25 years, and now they're helping provide PPP loans. Information, including how to qualify, at dreamspring.org. That's dreamspring.org. DreamSpring supports this program.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling, and we are talking about access to the COVID-19 vaccine. If there's something you want to add to the conversation, dial in now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. With us today on the line out of Fruitland, New Mexico, is Jordan Bennett-Begay, and she is the managing editor for Indian Country Today. Also on the line is the CEO of the National Indian Health Board, Stacy Boland, who's with us. She joins us out of Washington, D.C., and Jordan, just, you know, anything more? I think it's a critical time to be talking about the healthcare that the folks who are in urban areas are receiving. This is just an example. Is there any thoughts on the lessons we're learning from this and what needs to change in terms of, you know, people who are in urban settings getting healthcare? You're in a population there in the D.C. area, the headquarters of the Indian Health Service, the BIA is there. Many other departments where a lot of people work, and having to travel to get health care. And a lot of times people are working for their own tribal nations, and this is a situation. Anything you want to share, Jordan?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I thought it was very odd. I mean, just moving to D.C. 3 years ago for this job, I thought, you know, I think I was very fortunate that, you know, I do have health insurance, but I also think about, you know, urban natives who move to, you know, cities and don't have health insurance, or even, you know, just navigating the healthcare system is complex in itself. And I always thought it was odd that the IHS headquarters is out in, you know, on the East Coast in Maryland, but there's really no clinic, you know, to help out urban natives. Maybe the pandemic will change that right now. And I think my story is just one of the many that I'm hearing, that a lot of people are going home and tribes are offering it to their tribal citizens. You know, the COVID-19 incident commander from Umatilla, I talked to him a few weeks ago, and he said their tribe sent out mailers to all of their tribal citizens saying, we have the vaccine, if you want to come home, you can come home, we'll give it to you. And I'm just hearing more stories from, you know, online, from friends of colleagues, people who are driving, you know, being the road warriors, they are going back to, you know, get their vaccines. And maybe this is, you know, a wake-up call for the health system and public health system to improve for American Indians and Alaska Natives.
Yes. Well, Jordan, thank you for your comments. We got a caller on the line. Let's go ahead and turn to them. We have Joaquin on the line in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Joaquin, thank you for reaching out. You're on air.
Hello, people. I just said, be careful what the media tells you. Be careful what people tell you. Pfizer has 3 billion in criminal convictions for misusing drugs, stuff like that. Johnson & Johnson as well. Paying off physicians. There's a lot of stuff going on, not to mention in the 60s and 70s, Indian Health Services sterilizing Native women, things of that nature. People, be aware of it. Learn your history before you just turn to these so-called experts and people like that. It's been a long time that they put diseases on us, and we'll survive. But be careful what you do. Thank you.
All right, Joaquin, thank you for your call. Thank you for your challenge. This is a space for all opinions. I really appreciate you calling in. I wish you the best, and you can call in too and share. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Also here too, out of Ada, Oklahoma, is Dr. Charles Grimm, and he is a Secretary of Health for the Chickasaw Nation, and he's a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Dr. Grimm, thank you for being with us today here on Native America Calling.
I really appreciate you having me here today, Tara. Look forward to visiting with you and your listeners.
And Dr. Grimm, I do want to give a moment to our caller who just called in. And, you know, there's a lot of people who, you know, share his opinion and his thoughts and are skeptical of all of this. And we got to address it. Is there anything you'd like to share with our caller, Joaquin?
Well, I would tell Joaquin that, you know, anytime there's new medications developed and things like that, everyone should, you know, worry about their effectiveness, be concerned about their safety. And, you know, a lot of people were very concerned about the rapid way that these vaccines were developed. It was much faster than traditionally done. And I think, you know, it's been put out in the press a lot that, you know, there were no parts of the FDA approval process that all of our medications go through skipped. What they did was, number one, they were able to recruit people much more quickly. There were, you know, thousands and thousands of people that were ready to participate in trials like this to see if these vaccines were effective. So they recruited people much more quickly. They were able to go through the phase one, phase two, and phase three trials you know, very rapidly without the gaps in between them like there often are. And they are still watching the safety data today to ensure that these vaccines are safe. So far, there have, you know, there are no, you know, significant sorts of side effects that you wouldn't normally see in many other vaccines or medications, but sometimes these get played up today because instead of a vaccine getting developed over 4, 5, or 6 years for a disease that may not affect as many people, this one was affecting everyone worldwide. And so we were giving worldwide and still are giving worldwide vaccinations. And so when things come up, it's in the press a lot more than you would normally see in certain things. But I will tell you that everything that we know to date, these vaccines are safe vaccines to take. And if you do have concerns, you know, you should talk with your physician, you know, the person that you seek your care from and you trust with your health, and see what they have to say, you know, individually about your health and whether you should take the vaccine or not.
And it's interesting. Even a year in, we are still learning about all of this, and there's still a long way to go to understanding more. And Dr. Grimm, I do want you to touch on the nation you're working with now is offering vaccines for people beyond tribal citizens and tribal residents. Tell us about that decision and what the experience has been with that.
All right. I'd like to do that. And I'll be giving your listeners, any of them that are close enough or even if they're willing to hop on an airplane like Jordan and Stacy did, I'm going to give you a link here, you know, so that you can get on and sign up to get a vaccine through the Chickasaw Nation if you'd like to do that. But we, like many tribes, received our first vaccines on December the 14th. It was a dose or the first bit of Pfizer that came out, 975 doses. And by that afternoon, we were starting to do our healthcare personnel, which were priority number one. And we had planned such that we have a hospital, a medical center, and three clinics. We had planned that each of those sites would be giving vaccines in a drive-through format. We use an app, an online app, and I have statistics that are on my desktop that are updated live through that app when people sign up. You know, when I see total vaccines, I see how many first and second doses, and I will tell you that as of today, we have individuals that have come from 35 different states to get vaccines here. But when we prioritized our people early on, like everyone in the nation did, states, CDC made recommendations, tribes all set their own priorities, we talked with our governor, Governor Bill Anitubby, and many of you know that in Oklahoma, our towns are very mixed with Indian and non-Indian people side by side. And so the Chickasaw Nation has had a long history of helping the communities that we live in to do things over the years. So we knew early on that we would plan to deliver vaccines to our non-beneficiaries in all the communities that we serve, and anyone that was willing to get to us if the supply of vaccines was great enough. Early on, that was the issue, low supply of vaccines. Now that they are becoming more and more available, we went through our phases very rapidly of our priority system. And early on, we even when we were doing elders, we did, you know, if you were an elder Chickasaw citizen or an elder patient, we did you and your spouse, whether your spouse was, you know, an Indian or not. And so, you know, we very early on started doing that so that we could protect households and protect families. We also used part of our COVID funding to the tribe had owned and purchased it in earlier years and had not found a suitable use for it yet. We had an old Kmart building that we owned. We decided we'd turn that into an emergency operations facility to use for any emergencies from pandemics on to weather events to anything. And one of the things that we planned into that was a drive-through testing site and a drive-through vaccination site. So we've developed a 16-lane vaccination site there. All three of our other clinics have vaccines available at their locations, and Ada is where I'm talking about with the large one. We have sites in Ardmore, Tishomingo, and Purcell. So our sites go from about the Oklahoma City area down to the Texas border, for those of you that are not around here that might want to know where we're at. So we have capacity in all of our locations to give anywhere between 3,000 to 5,000 vaccines a day, or 15,000 to 26,000 vaccines per week. And the way we monitor that or titrate that is we see what the demand is by signups and who hasn't been able to sign up, and so we can open more appointments per hour at our locations, and we have maximum numbers that we can serve a day at those locations. But you sign up on this app, you pick your time, and then you show up, and you never have to get out of your car. We've designed all of our sites with the Lean and Toyota production system processes such that it's a very easy flow. It never seems crowded or fast, or rushed. Then you go through your waiting time of 15 minutes or 30 minutes if you have conditions that would require that. And then you sign up for your second dose that way. We get people that also ask, I didn't get my first dose with you. Can I get my second dose with you? And right now, the one side of ours that we've set up to do Moderna is our Tishomingo clinic. So if you want or you need a second dose of Moderna, that's where you would go. And our app drives you that way. And at the other sites, we're currently doing Pfizer. We just recently got some of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and we haven't rolled it out widely yet, because when Indian Health Service sent it out to us, they said, we won't be able to get you any more for 3 to 4 weeks, and it was because of production, within the Janssen or Johnson & Johnson vaccine itself. They'd given everything out, and there just wasn't any more available yet nationwide, so we haven't really set up like one of the lanes at our sites to give that vaccine yet, but we are excited about the use of that vaccine, because for those people that only want a single-shot vaccine versus having to come back, we think that there will be a lot of people that choose that vaccine as opposed to perhaps the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines. So we monitored, as we were going through our phases, and as soon as we were able, we opened up to everyone. We opened up to educators slightly before we opened up to, everyone. We felt that was an important group. Our governor and our tribe feel that, education is extremely important, and they were having difficulties getting vaccinated. And so we opened up to them, and they were very, very appreciative of that. And we had people coming from a lot of locations all around the state and other states to get it at that time. But now anyone can get it that wants it. And let me just roughly or give you very quickly that site, and then I'll stop and see if you have any other questions. If anyone is interested, it is covidvaccine.chickasaw.net, and I'll spell that out, covidvaccine.chickasaw.net, covidvaccine.chickasaw.net.
Thank you for that, Dr. Grimm. And we do got to wrap things up, but I was curious how the tribe is receiving the vaccines. Is this something that they've done on their own, or is this through IHS?
It is through the Indian Health Service. And, each tribe estimated to the IHS, what their vaccination population would be. The size that you would need to meet all of your needs. And so based on that, because we're a larger tribe and we had a larger population that we had identified that we would serve, early on we got kind of the same as anyone did, one box of that Pfizer. But as they started getting more and more available, it started going to those sites in higher numbers that could actually get vaccines into people more quickly. And with our capacity, they knew that we were able to do that. And so we were getting higher shipments, and they never would give us higher shipments if the vaccines were limited in locations. But now that it's becoming more available, that's why we're getting such larger numbers.
Thank you for that. Well, Dr. Grimm, I do appreciate you jumping on the line with us today, Dr. Charles Grimm. Also, thank you to everybody that we heard from in the hour. and we'll continue our coverage on the COVID-19 vaccine. If there's an aspect that you'd like to talk about, you can always reach out to us. comments@nativeamericacalling.com is one way to reach out. You can find us on Facebook or tweet it to us at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Thanks also to President Jonathan Nez, Jordan Bennett-Begay, and Stacey Bolin for also joining us today here. Tomorrow, we're back with a conversation about smart money management. I'm Tara Gatewood.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
How me takuya piki? We chose on uapi tokaya iki gina kapo. Wana March 15, 2021. Waheha luhapicha uch iguapo. La kozania oti iliapo isamasola chihantas. Nish lil yayo, healthcare.gov, nish lil mas apkayo. 1-800-318-2596. Le wotchaniki, Medicare and Medicaid oti atahi apelo. Ho, hechetuelo.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.